go. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, Momo Challenge Survivor. What is that about? I saw that the other day, and I promised online that our show would be Momo Challenge free, so...
I don't want to talk about that. What okay. I want to talk about is how downstairs today, in the Tim Hortons in Center 6, there was no sugar... In the one thing, the cream and the milk were switched in the second thing, and then there was no coffee. That's three strikes, Tim.
No coffee? You got that hospitality services? Note.
Dropping the ball.
Because if the Donaldson can't get his coffee, the show just gets completely thrown out of whack. So.
Well, it all worked out in the end. I'm just saying, pick up the ball is what I'm saying.
This
but they listen to magic downstairs anyway.
It's
not like they're listening and sweating. Anyway.
Sorry, Magic.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen and listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today... The good news is that Donald Trump didn't give away the farm for some magic beans in Vietnam, meeting with Kim Jong-un, but he really didn't get anything for all the effort, so we'll talk about his latest failure in diplomacy, and then we'll talk about another slow-moving disaster at Queen's Park as the leak changes to the local integrated health networks become reality, and spaghetti dinners sure have gotten very expensive.
Also.
And finally, the Vatican has finally decided to have a meeting on sex abuse by priests, but did anything substantive come of it? But first, we have breaking news from Monday.
Is that a breaking? Yeah, it is. That's our improvised breaking news.
Well,
we're on a budget, tight budget.
Yeah, getting tighter. Three by-elections were held on Monday, one in Burnaby South in British Columbia, one in Outremont, which is in Quebec, and one in York Simcoe. Now, these are kind of, at least two out of the three of them were kind of a big deal. Not that any by-elections are more of a bigger deal than the others, but in Outremont, we had the riding vacated by the former NDP leader. And in Burnaby South, we have the current NDP leader running to get a seat in office. And so, yeah, the good news is that Jagmeet Singh is now an MP. He won Burnaby South rather handily, I'll do the numbers.
Yes, do the numbers.
Jagmeet Singh won 39% of the vote. The Liberal candidate Richard T. Lee, who was actually the second Liberal candidate, if you remember that debacle.
Fiasco, yeah.
Still got 26% of the vote. Conservative Party candidate Jay Shin got 22.5% in a surprise. Fourth place finish with 10.6% was the People's Party candidate Laura Lynn Thompson. Oddly enough, there was no Green Party candidate running in this riding.
Well, part of that too was that what do they call that when you don't run against a leader, leaving it open to not draw any vote away from them. But speaking of drawing votes away, that People's Party result might, to me anyway, is the most significant thing to come out of this, because People's Party, first kick of the can in an election, gets 11% in a by-election that had, 30% of the vote, which was fairly high, because the other ones were like, I don't know, in the 20s? Was one of them 19?
It was 29.9%, but I mean, the regular voter turnout in this riding or in the last election was like closer to 61.
By-elections are notorious for having low turnouts, but when you look at the numbers and that, it's sort of goes back to the days when Reform and Conservative votes were splitting all over the place, and then right up the middle came the Chrétien Liberals for the entire 90s, pretty much. Mm-hmm. That's what I saw from that, because she was like, I want to call her super Christian, but maybe that's not fair. She's like,
I mean, in her bio is that she's a Christian blogger and author, so.
But that's what she does. That's her job, right? She's not, I mean, you know, we've had two lawyers and a businessman replaced with two lawyers and an academic. That's usually who runs and wins, right? Not conservative blogger, Christian blogger. Oh, and an inspirational speaker too, but she seems to be in well with rebel media, which that alone should be, I didn't really want to spend this much time talking about it, but it's a significant draw of the vote, 11% for, somebody who know, generally, let's say the Greens and other parties who are even knowns clock 3, 4, maybe even 5, but 11 was like, whoa. So I don't know if that's significant. This is why we love by-elections so much, because we try and, you know, roll the bones and see what comes out of it. But to me, that I thought that was the biggest number, even though it was one of the smallest numbers. Because, you know, Scott Davidson winning in Peter Van Loan's old riding in York Simcoe, and the weather was really bad, of course. That was didn't close the polls. But, yeah, and Van Loan just sort of left as well, right? He was like, I'm going to retire, but he's actually still a lawyer. It didn't really make too much sense, because normally when people leave, it's either under a cloud or they're not well. He was just like, oh, I'm going to go now. Considering how close it is to the end run to October, it's like, why wouldn't he just stick around? Maybe an opportunity presented itself that he couldn't escape from, but...
I need to leave. My home planet leads
plus
me.
Years, so, yeah, so he'd be pensioned off. He'll be okay. He's got the gold parachute or whatever we want to call it. He'll be fine.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what to say about... because. That's like the one riding that the People's Party did really well in. They got 2.1% in Outremont, and then in York Simcoe, it was 1.9%. Yeah. So does that 11% in Burnaby South look significant because half the typical electorate sat at home, or would there be an equal sort of reaction? Would that still be 11% if everybody who typically votes in Burnaby South came out? And then what kind of threat is that? Then you have to kind of extrapolate what kind of threat that might be anywhere where conservatives could be competitive, particularly in suburban areas like Outremont, Burnaby South, and York Simcoe, which people have sort of identified as what may be the Achilles heel for the Liberals, places that swing both ways, so-called. Well, I don't know if we call it that, but I'll call it that, purple ridings.
Sure. But, I mean, that's the thing with Outremont is that, you know, Tom Mulcair, even though he was, you know, drafted by Jack Layton to run for the NDP, was a longtime Liberal, right? So and that riding is Liberal. Mm-hmm. So can we call Tom Mulcair a Liberal Democrat? I don't know. I mean, he was he was the head of the NDP. He was in the party, but he, you know, somebody who's like ex-Liberal and Liberal riding. It's kind of like how Jean Charest was conservative and then he was Liberal. There's a lot of back and forth there. People love people right on the line. So it's not as if Outremont went from this staunch NDP riding to a staunch Liberal one. It's like it's just been a Liberal riding forever at the federal level. So that wasn't really a surprise.
But looking at it a different way, it was the former riding of the NDP leader. And if you don't know the politics that well, if you don't do that kind of deep dive, it does reflect badly, especially when you have Tom Mulcair having spent several weeks
crap-talking
the current leader. From
the Greens are going to do really well.
from his perch as a CBC or not a, as a CTV pundit, which is, I find kind of gross, this kind of American pundit class exporting it to Canada.
We just like campus community radio pundits because they, you know.
Yeah.
We do it for the love of it.
We do it for the love.
Not for the...
In Outremont, Rachel Mendayan won with 40.4% of the vote. Julian Sanchez. Notice I didn't make the dirty joke. Julia, dirty Sanchez.
You just did.
I just did. I couldn't help myself.
Sorry, Julia. I'm Mr. Apologies. I wholeheartedly apologize.
Daniel Green of the Green Party.
That's
oddly
the best.
Enough. Yeah. It's good work. Got 12.5%.
Totally intentional, right?
Yeah. Michael DeChase of the Bloc was a close fifth with 11.2. And then the conservative candidate, Jasmine Loris, 7.3. This was a super low voter turnout, 21.4%. In York Simcoe, Peter Van Loan has retired, but it is still a safe conservative seat, thanks to Scott Davidson with 53.9%, which is still pretty good. I can't read my writing. Of the Liberal Party was the... Sean Not of the Dead was second with 29%. NDP Jessa McLean was 7.5%. And there were a couple of like kind of weird parties I never heard of. The Progressive Canadian Party, Dorian Baxter, 3.8%. Matthew Lund of the Greens, 2.7%. Robert Gordis of the People's Party, 1.9%. Libertarian Keith Dean Comar, 0.6%. Aiden Suhr of the National Citizens Alliance, 0.1%. But then just above him, John the Engineer Turmel with 0.4%. Election number 98.
69 big votes.
Yeah. He's two away from getting the steak knives.
Like I said, very annoying individual, but I wish him all the best on reaching the century of elections.
I think we should try and see if he wants to.
We have to get him on. Yeah.
I was thinking about that today.
He's already slagged me a couple times online over the years, so it's up to you, man.
Me too. I wonder if
He did a jab at you as well?
It's from something I wrote during the
I think he just
election.
Naturally does that. I don't know if he Googles himself
Google
and then he finds something
himself.
And says, so-and-so is... smack talking me,
remember?
So I'm gonna
that was like election.
I don't think
that was
so.
In the 60s when he was 11 years ago. So I'm sure like he probably doesn't even remember. Though he might.
But
Google
I think he likes airtime, right? He likes to be front and center. So
yeah,
I'm sure all of our listeners are really excited. We're gonna get John the Engineer tomorrow. Wow. I remember seeing what was it with the Abolitionist Party or something, and whatever the heck they were called, Get Rid of Money. And he was on Much Music or something. That's a lot of years ago. So
that was when
Much Music style coverage.
That was when Much Music did counter programming instead of just reruns of stuff on other
Teen
TV
Mom
channels.
Or yeah,
blah blah blah. Take that, Much Music. Anyway,
whoa.
So yeah, we'll keep you posted about John and the Engineer Terminal coming on. It is interesting. Because when you see the rise of these other parties, or not maybe not rise,
the appearance, let's say, because it's not really
like the National Citizens Alliance. I actually looked them up. They were like formed in Calgary in like 2014, and they ran like mostly a couple of candidates in around the Calgary area. So why are they dropping people into Ontario?
Because somebody read about them on the internet and thought it'd be a good idea to run as them.
Right.
That's why.
Right? But still, it's a center-right party. It's very, like, it almost sounds like libertarian. They're for, like, low taxes, no carbon tax, small government, referendums, recalls, and all that, which is a very libertarian-y platform. And then the other one, the Progressive Canadian Party, is sort of like the old PC party remnants, because they were formed after the unification of reform and the PC party, and it became the Conservative Party of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been sort of like losing steam. Like their high point was like 2006, I think. They had 25 candidates, and they've been sort of like losing steam. They had 8 in the last election, 9 in the election before that. And I think what it speaks to is just like a really widespread dissatisfaction. I mean, it's hard to use to apply by-election results on national terms, but I think that's something that may not be considered in this election, is that there's a lot of like a lot of people who are just sort of disaffected with everything. I think this coming federal election we're going to see like a pretty low voter turnout, because people are like extraordinarily dissatisfied with the Liberals. People look at Scheer and they don't see a prime minister. People aren't, you know, conservatives who maybe don't want to go with Scheer aren't probably not going to move too much with the People's Party. The NDP is sort of rudderless.
And I think that may, as I said off the top there, that you'll probably see it in the prairies where people feel that the conservatives aren't conservative enough. The same thing happened with Harper. There were people that were like, oh, he sold us out. Even though like on, say, 98% of the portfolio, but it'll be something like abortion makes them flip their wigs, so then they'll go People's Party, right? And if you get enough of those people in ridings that are close, because right now and we're miles away from it, but right now the polling is close. They've got conservatives and liberals neck and neck. Mm-hmm. By then, the SNC-Lavalin scandal will have faded a little bit unless something else comes out. Jody Wilson-Raybould has been able to say her piece. I guess we're sort of touching on another issue very briefly. But that, you know,
the
conservatives are trying to make massive hay with this thing, and in actual fact, it's not going to last. So I'm watching Scheer say, you know, I think Justin Trudeau should do the right thing and resign.
Yeah,
it's like it's scripted, man. Like,
but he's got no way. I mean, yeah, it's like terribly scripted.
He's not very good at reading the script. Trudeau is very good at delivering the script.
Yeah, they have this
being
PR
a drama.
They have this PR plan. Movies, it's right? Like Monday we're going to go and do a town hall and talk to ordinary Canadians. On Tuesday we're going to have a interview day with national media on Wednesday. We're going to deliver this speech where he demands that Justin Trudeau do the right thing. And it's just, it's
there'll be nine standing ovations and a clap out.
So false. It's so static. And you're right. He's not a good actor.
No.
And he can't deliver.
In my opinion, anyway. I don't know. I mean, I haven't been to acting school, but I took drama in grade 10.
Everybody took drama in grade 10.
So we should all have some skills in that department. That's like French, right? Is it cereal box or can you
have
a conversation avec les... Yeah, okay.
No, that's a fair point.
On that note, before we go straight into the...
The question is with the NC and SNC-Lavalin thing, or Lavalin, as I hear.
Lavalin.
Oui. With the French reporters.
Chantal.
Well, you know, there's what's her face on CTV too, Janet Dirks. No, not Janet Dirks. Well, anyway, moving on.
Jean-Pierre Beauchemin?
Maybe.
Yeah.
that
nerds. Okay.
Nerds. Yes. Nerds. Yes. That you know, moving forward, you know, has this peaked? Like, because I think Jody Wilson-Raybould. Or J-War, as we were talking about before the show.
We gave her a new name.
J-War.
If, like, her finally talking and saying her bit, saying her truth, as she would say, that was sort of the final piece of this to drop. Now it's just going to be the jockeying of, like, who's going to be able to keep this going. Because have we – and it all depends if we've heard it all. And if all that was just, you know, people trying to pressure her to, you know, drop the thing. Or if there was more than that, if there was, like, more action, like, maybe trying to get around her as justice minister. I mean, that's the next big question is this all there is? And if this is all there is, then, yeah, it's going to be a nothing
It'll
burger
just
by
fade.
The time October gets here.
I bet they're all happy that it happened now and not in September.
Absolutely.
They would have been able to make more hay, but Absolutely. Now it's just kind of like,
Okay. That's
Our final conclusion.
It's a good thing this is an audio show and not written, because I don't know how you would write. Anyway. So Donald Trump went to Vietnam for the first time to summit with Kim Jong-un. And I think Seth Meyers of Late Night put it best when he said that Trump went to Vietnam and got killed at home. Because as he was in Vietnam, his longtime attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, was testifying before Congress in what was like a fairly brutal display of naked partisanship on all sides.
All sides.
But meanwhile, in Vietnam, if you're up around midnight, you probably might have saw the breaking news that there was no deal, which surprises no one.
No one.
Because Samantha Vinegard, who was... one of Obama's national security advisors wrote a pretty good piece in the Daily Beast explaining how this stuff works in terms of how you prepare for a summit like this. And it was fairly obvious Donald Trump did none of that, which is why you have this elaborate two-day meeting in Vietnam that ends in nothing, because North Korea wants the sanctions gone before they start nuclearizing. The U.S. wants them to denuclearize, or at least start denuclearizing before they even start talking about sanctions.
Or denuke, relief. As Trump put it. We were talking denuke. They're not going to denuke. He actually said denuke. I was like, what? But you're like you're saying, this is the problem in terms of preparation. These things don't happen all of a sudden or overnight unless there's something very critical going on. As far as I could tell, the preparations for this took at least a year. And that's Pompeo and the gang. So the new band. doing the back and forth, right? Flying, I'm not sure how many times they went and met with other North Korean people of whatever stripe, not Kim himself. That's so they say that sort of for the big reveal, which of course failed miserably. I was surprised I got up this morning. I did, you know, Vietnam 7 hours ahead, right? So everything that happened was. Everything that was going to happened. When I woke up, I was like, oh, they're done. I was like, well, it's not really a surprise. And the bit that I saw this morning, Trump was completely distracted. This was after the niceties where they'd had their meal and then they'd sort of do the photo op and kind of stand there. You could tell by Trump's face, Kim's beaming away and Trump is pulling this face because he knows at home, like you said, all the stuff is going on with Cohen testifying and he's a liar, he's a racist and all the other stuff that he said.
Con Man was the third
Con
one.
Man. And I thought, just as a little bit of an aside with that too, didn't you find it weird the Republicans with their props? We don't allow props in Canada. I know it happened famously with Stockwell Day, but the Republicans have props up like Liar Liar Pants on Fire with his face facing down the way at him. I was like, this is really weird. Not only is it juvenile, but it's this is how he, anyway.
Well, it was super
total complete aside, but I think
levels.
It's this aside,
especially bringing out the one random black woman who's worked for Donald
of course,
Trump,
yeah.
Who isn't
because
Omarosa
isn't going to do it, yeah. So I think this distraction completely sunk any interest Trump might have because he'd be, you know, in the hotel room watching CNN or whatever he's watching.
Well, that was the rumor, right? That he was pulled an all-nighter watching the live feed. It was because Cohen's been doing like several days of testimony, and this is the one he did of public testimony. And that Trump, because he's on the other side of the world, was pulling an all-nighter watching this live on whatever network he was watching it on. And it's just, yeah, it kind of showed that his mind wasn't in it, such as it is, that he, that, you know, I don't know if it was just the work of fate that this sort of the timing worked out the same, or if it's just, you know, well planned or strategized on the part of Elijah Cummings. But at the end of the day, yeah, you have enough trouble sort of keeping his mind on things at the best of times, like see any one of the dozen books written about the Trump administration for further details.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it was clear that there was no focus on the job, no idea on how to get there, no preparation done in advance. It was flying by the seat of his gut, and this is what he gets you when you fly by the seat of your gut and you don't know anything in the first place.
Yeah, and what did he say this morning? Sometimes you have to walk.
Yeah.
Like, it's just your way of saying, okay, we're done. It was one of those things where they seemed to have a lot on the plate, but at the same time, they didn't. There was lots of talk of, will they formally end the Korean War, which is still on after how many years now?
Technically speaking,
60-something? Yeah. They never really signed a formal armistice agreement. And, of course, as you said, the denuking, which was high on the agenda. And as far as I understand it, it was Kim said, well, you know, quit with the sanctions. Because I believe China and Russia via the UN, which the U.S. has issues with, but that's where the sanctions initially came from. They managed to get them on side, even though they're allies of you know, China obviously stronger than Russia, allies with North Korea and what they do.
Right.
They have friends in those two somehow. But with no throttling back of the sanctions, Trump was like, well, we can't do that. No, we're not going to do that. You need to denuke, and then we will do that. So,
well, there's
they
a
just
level
shut
of
her down. And considering that the train, do you know about the train ride? He doesn't fly in the planes anymore because there's Soviet issue and probably not safe.
No.
So he took this meander through China. And it sounds like he's going to stay behind and do a bit of tourism while he's in Vietnam. I don't know if he's going to pick up some pirated DVDs or whatever you do while you're there.
Well, this is it. Like,
He seemed very at ease. This, it was weird because he's normally.
And his sister came out bringing him a crystal ashtray when he was having a cigarette too. And,
I missed that.
It was all a show, and it was all a show. Like, look at me, I'm a world player. I'm meeting with the U.S. president.
I still smoke.
We're having this. No, well, yeah, but we're having this summit. The guys running, you know, next to the limo, the getting off the train, the red carpet treatment, kicking the U.S. press out of the hotel that was set up as their media center.
Yeah, and it takes a long time to set up a media center, as we know. And they had an hour. They're like, get your stuff. Kim's coming. They're like, well, come on.
And then, you know, he got everything he wanted out of this, which is to look like a big shot on the world stage. He knew he wasn't going to give up his nukes. He knew that Trump wasn't going to give him sanctions relief. They probably desperately need sanctions relief in North Korea. But, you know, there's no way they're going to get it. Plus, they have Donald Trump saying at his press conference this morning that he takes Kim Jong-un's word for it, that he had no idea what was happening to Otto Warmbier. I almost said Otto.
Oh, who was comatose from prison? Is that the guy
he
that
was in
stole the
prison.
Poster?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, and came back. And they released his nearly dead body to the U.S. authorities after being tortured and all that. But, you know, you're talking about a country with 120,000 people in prison camps. Like, they have the corner on the prison camp industry. And Donald Trump's like, oh, I take his word for it that he didn't know what was happening to one of the few American prisoners they had in their custody, that he was being tortured to death. Come on.
And that was one of the biggest worries, is that, I mean, he's never really on message anyway. I think it was Pompeo was worried. Like, he was trying to – Trump cannot be controlled. And I think they were trying to contain it.
Right.
But they can't do it because he won't listen, as we know from, like you say, the many books written about the – he's only been in 2 years and there's like 100 books about Trump.
Yeah.
Probably way less about Kim Jong-un. I'm sure there's one out there somewhere. Speaking of books, I would highly recommend – I think it was – was it called Escape from Camp 13? Was about somebody who got out – managed to get out of North Korea. Was a really good –
That sounds right.
Really good book if you want some insight as to what goes on in Escape – sorry – I was off by one. Escape from Camp 14. I would highly recommend that for a read if you're looking for something for your reading list in terms of – it's from a few years back. Again, a little bit of an aside, but I believe people still should read books. They don't all have to be e-books.
But to go back to Pompeo, he was doing one of the Sunday shows, right? And they were asking him, like, so has North Korea started to nuclearize? And he's like, no. And then, of course, you go back to Donald Trump. He's like, oh, yeah, they've started to nuclearize. And you don't even have the administration on the same page. It's just, what are you even doing? And, you know, I know what they're doing. He's bringing the same bravado attitude about negotiating, that he's brought to his life in real estate.
His TV show.
And his TV show, all of which, you know, he didn't have the biggest TV show on TV. He didn't have the biggest real estate company in New York, blah, blah, blah. And we were talking about this before the show, too. We're talking about the guy who can't make a golf course work in Scotland, who can't make casinos work in Atlantic City, but he's going to go and resolve the Korean War 6 decades after the fact and denuclearize North Korea? I hardly think so. And on top of it all, he's doing it. And I think this goes to what we found out a couple of weeks ago, where he's talking to Shinzo Abe about sending letters to the Nobel Committee to put him in for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, boy.
And this is all about him trying to show he's better than the last guy who held the office, who was an accomplished black man, because, God forbid, Donald Trump is shown up by probably in his mind, an uppity black guy. You know, speaking of racism, but I mean, that seems to be what drives him. He desperately wants to do all the things Obama did or get rid of them. And it's harder than he thinks. And I think this is proof of that. And the fact that he walked away kind of, you know, crestfallen, there's no plans for a future summit. There's no, we're having a love affair talk, you know.
No, actually, we're just good friends. Yeah. And I think it's just almost an accident of history that Trump is able to have Summit 1 and 2 with Kim Jong-un, because they are so alike.
Yeah.
Even though they're, you know, polar opposites in terms of the political spectrum. In fact, you could almost say that the spectrum doesn't even apply to these guys, because they're somewhere off the scale. They're not just left or right wing, like. Kim Jong-un is the ultimate, like, it's just not even far left. It's almost, he's almost on his own. They're both
right
lone wolves. I'm a loner, Daddy, a rebel. yeah, sorry. Slid in a Pee Wee Herman reference, but I don't know where that came from. Just like Open Source, we are loners and rebels, and we need a commercial now.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with some talk from Queen's Park, and then we're going to go to the Vatican to, you know, see what's going on there. Anyway, you're listening to Open Source as Guelph on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Ended. This is one of those rare double headers in terms of staying on theme. That was Camper Van Beethoven and the Monks of Doom from their album Van Teeks. I think it's a bit of a throwback. Oh, 93. I wouldn't have thought it was that long ago. You may know Camper Van Beethoven for their hit Take
Back
This.
Back when buying CDs was a new exciting fad.
It's vintage. You may know them for their hit Take the Skinheads Bowling, but that's not what that song was. That song was In Anticipation of the Pope.
Ooh.
So which ties into topics 3 and 4.
Yeah, that lines up into the back half of the show nicely. The camper van reference, I mean, it was kind of like the least of scandal of the week because we got some more details about what was sort of going on there, and I think it leads into why Doug Ford was pushing pretty hard for Ron Tavener to take over as...
So we just call him Doug now. You know, yeah, Doug said...
Friend, you know, yeah. Doug, our friend Doug. Pushing for Ron Tavener to take over as the chief of OPP, the Globe and Mail got a hold of some emails where Doug Ford got rather explicit in terms of he couldn't trust the people who was protecting him, the members of the OPP protective detail, because there was changing up constantly. There were all these new people coming in. And
I'm getting effed around by the OPP was yes. the exact words. I can't say the word, but I think his email should be washed out with soap, don't you? Yikes.
Terrific.
It's true, though.
But yeah, it's sort of... yeah, it's sort of bizarre, and this is kind of where the van situation, he wanted the $50,000 for the improved Premier Mobile.
And wanted to pick his own cops. What is he, like Frank Underwood? Like, I want him and him. I want these two
or
for the party van. The reclining
Frank Underwood. This is more like Raymond Reddington stuff. It's like, yes, I will work for the FBI, but I will bring my own people. I can't do a James Spader voice.
That's pretty good, huh? Give that a 7. Right, no, but yeah, truth and reality and fiction. It's like this, the super van is like, well, really, dude? Really?
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, like
minor
I said,
point, but
that
still
was
kind
the
of
least
funny.
Of the scandals
yes.
this
oh my
week.
Goodness.
The breaking news today was that the court challenge to the education, the changes to the sex education curriculum was dismissed. It was a charter-based challenge from the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario and the Canadian Civil Liberties Union. I don't think this is the last. It's certainly one of several court challenges there were, and I don't think it'll be the last. But I think just from my own layman's interpretation of the law, yeah, it's perhaps not a charter matter, a charter rights and freedoms matter. So that happened today.
Well, thanks for letting me. I was slugging it today and completely missed any breaking news. But there's something every day, right?
Yeah.
As you say. So.
So yeah, yesterday there to reference back to the top of the show, there was the $1,250 a plate dinner at in Etobicoke. That was the fundraiser billed as the biggest political fundraiser ever held in Ontario. And you could be there if you want to give $1,250, as one of the cabinet ministers said. What I find particularly galling in the midst of all this is that you look at the fundraising numbers for the first 2 months of this year. NDP, $30,000. Liberals, $20,000. Greens, $10,000. PCs, $506,000.
I'm surprised the Liberals are that low, but I guess they're at a bit of a low ebb.
Yeah.
And these $1,250 a plate fundraisers are interesting because $1,200, I think, is the limit per individual. So it must be $1,200 for the party and $50 for the spaghetti or whatever they're having. Probably not spaghetti. Sirloin and kimchi like Trump and Kim had, maybe. But I had heard that there's talk of, and you must have heard this too, there's talk of bringing back, like, making that number a bit larger, bumping it up to $1,600.
Mm-hmm.
And, the whole point of the exercise of reducing that number and getting corporations and unions out of donations was for precisely these reasons. Because, fundraising dinners aren't – the seat isn't usually that much.
Mm-hmm.
But the talk was – and I my opinion, I don't think it's wrong necessarily – is that, is this cash for access? Because there are a lot of people that can't afford a meal – that's that expensive and that you have to be a bit of a player to be able to pay for something like that, or somebody will enable you to go, say, I don't know, possibly the company that you work for will send you
right,
and maybe give you the money because, who has that line around to go for the, as we call them, the spaghetti, Ford made the point of saying, well, I'm going to a spaghetti dinner in Timmins or whatever it was, and it's $25 a plate. It's like, that's not the point.
No.
It's not a apples or a spaghetti and sirloin comparison, right?
Right.
It's not the food. It's the cash. You could potentially charge that for spaghetti, and people go, well, I got the spaghetti.
And he's been doing a lot of these things. Like, there was one at Bigamon's, I think, last month, just up the road in Kitchener. So he seems to be spending a lot of his time going around to these fundraising
Never
things.
Comes to Guelph, eh? I don't think he'll ever set foot.
Can you think of a reason why?
It'll have to be on the perimeter somewhere, like down on Clare Road.
Like, yeah, he'll be like a little, like, Pusslanch
Five Guys.
Somewhere.
If it's Five Guys, we're going.
Or, yeah. Or the Blaze Pizza. It's icky, right? And I think what I've... I mean, I don't... I'm not naive to think like, oh, can you see all this cash for access? Oh, no, I'm not like that at all. What I'm focused on the fact is like you are outstripping 10 to 1 all the other parties combined. And the election isn't even 3 years away.
A million
yet. It's
miles
over
away,
3 years. What are you raising all this money for except to, you know, war chest it and to give access to like a bunch of people who can afford. I don't even like paying $12.50 for a dinner. I'm not
$12.50, yeah.
I'm not going to pay $1,250 for dinner. I find the sort of waving away the concerns of it, like anybody can go, and the fact that the media wasn't allowed to cover it either, extra icky, because normally the premier will do the speech, the media will cover the speech, media will go out, everyone can have a good time eating and doing whatever. They didn't even let the media in this time. Every layer of this smells, and I don't mean of spaghetti
or sirloin steaks or whatever's going on. I'm hoping that something leaks out on it. You know, not good or bad, but somebody gets in and sort of tells us what was going on at it, and is it as has been implied that it is a bit of cash for access? Like I said, because of the price, right? You know, the cap, autism funding. There's so many things going on, but I wanted to talk a bit about healthcare, which was the other big announcement this week, and that massive healthcare changes announced for Tuesday, the largest probably the province has seen since OHIP was new. Our healthcare system, the super agency is coming. So it's a bunch of the super agency is who we will call
super agency.
They're amalgamating a lot of smaller things.
Yeah.
One, which we used to talk about all the time, was eHealth, which is a fiasco. I'm not sure if it still is, but they've never, ever digitized the records of this province.
No.
Which, as I've always said, half dozen nerds and some pizzas, you could digitize the records in probably a couple
of
weeks.
It's so bizarre why that costs so much.
It's because there's too many administrators. And in my opinion, that's who they should be cutting back on. But instead, you have something like Grand River Hospital getting rid of nursing staff. And
yeah.
I know I'm going off on a bit of a tangent, but this really, really bothers me. The amount of time I spent in the healthcare system and saw a bunch of people that I knew weren't doing anything. And you've got a whole floor of people with two nurses and a doctor on call. That is ridiculous.
Right.
This has been a Hertz moment. But you know what I mean. It's like they do these cuts.
The two
it's
are
like
necessarily,
you're cutting in the wrong place.
The two aren't necessarily related, what's happening with the LHINs and the hospitals. But I do find it interesting. We're getting these two stories back to back that up the road in Grand River Hospital, you're cutting 40 staff members, predominantly nurses. And it's predominantly they're not filling positions. But there are people sort of taking layoffs and taking early retirement and things. But it's like frontline people, again.
Yes.
Which should give people some pretty strong flashbacks about what happened in the 1990s, since everyone loves flashing back to as going as far back as Bob Rae when they're talking about the NDP.
But. And the administrator dude, a.k.a. the badges, as I call them, because I forgot some kind of flash badge came on, and he said something that was directly out of the corporate BS generator. But this is the thing, is that the government will say, well, that's the hospital's decision. We give them X amount, and then they decide what to do with it. Mm-hmm. But when you see these changes that are coming, it's six agencies being folded in, and the LHINs, which is the local healthcare network, is going to disappear. And it sounds like they're creating a different form of the healthcare network that's going to have a certain amount of people in it. I think the number they threw out was something to the tune of 300,000 different in rural areas. I'm not really sure how they're going to draw those lines, and it's going to take a while. But a couple, just to mention a couple of the agencies that got folded in, I'd never heard of them. Mm-hmm. Health Shared Services. And they're the ones that do all the scheduling for operations and whatnot. Health Quality Ontario, mm-hmm. who are the people that look after quality control. I'm saying to myself, I can't believe that's even an agency. Should that not come? And it's weird when you say to yourself, oh, maybe they're doing something that might not be so bad. But on the whole, the bad part eventually may be is that once you've consolidated all of this, we'll say, well, we figure that the private sector can do this, 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 and this better. It's like when you go give blood in Ontario, that's private. You go to Life Labs, it's private. Mm-hmm. It's not, it does get public money, private. Same with home care. ParaMed will come and take care of the seniors. It's a private thing. And that, not to slag the company, but I could again go into a whole my dealings with these private companies. Let's just say oftentimes no fault of the workers. Administrators, I think, were at fault. It didn't go well. So with this evidence on the smaller level, what the heck is going to happen with this super agency? Remains to be seen. I'm sure we'll be talking about it at length until they pull the plug on us.
And it's worth noting, too. Don't joke about that.
No, I know. That came as soon as I said it, I'm like, whoops, redacted. There we go.
It's worth noting, too, that there were no changes. Remember, this whole thing leaked back in January.
Yeah. And they're the like, documents. NDP, all lies.
They're like, oh, this is a draft. There are going to be so many changes by the time this – and it's exactly the same.
The draft watermark. The fact that people – civil servants are willing to leak this kind of stuff sort of speaks to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And somebody got fired, right? We did talk about that. Somebody got lost their job, so.
Yep, that happened.
Somebody would probably hire them right away because they have some integrity. Like Jody Wilson-Raybould. Anyway.
All right.
In other news.
Speaking of lack of integrity, the Vatican had a meeting last week about sex abuse by priests. It's pretty much been universally agreed. Nothing concrete came out of it. I mean, it's only been a problem that's been around for 30 or 40 years, so no rush.
200 years, 2,000 years. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just people kind of go back to this breaking out of the Boston Archdiocese back in 2001, 2002. That's the big spotlight story,
yep.
You know, film of the same name and all that. But, you know, I remember this, and I went back in the Wayback Machine. This was a thing in Canada and in other places too, but I'm just specifically about the Canadian experience. This goes back to, like, Newfoundland in the 80s.
Mount Cashel.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to find the name of it.
The Christian Brothers.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's been – these stories have been popping up since the 80s, and – my first reaction was like calling everybody to the Vatican to have a talk about it right now is a pretty weak response to something that has frankly been a crisis for at least 20 years and has actually been a problem, if not an outright crisis, for a heck of a lot longer.
Yeah, this is window dressing stuff. It really, it's all one Irish survivor called it all optics and no substance. It was quite a few people went to the Vatican to witness and bear witness to this. But, you know, the Pope's strongly worded address on Sunday, whatever it was, doesn't do anything, really. He's just saying stuff. And it's
when
like
you're throwing it on Satan.
Yeah, it's Satan's fault. Or yeah. These people are the tools of Satan. And, of course, the bombshell, which you mentioned in the, you know, tweeting about our show, was Cardinal Pell, who's the third in command of the Vatican, if I understand it right, he's like the treasurer, I guess? He holds the purse strings?
It was a new position that Francis created to deal with another church scandal, which was concerning the Vatican finances. Yeah.
Was busted for some historic assaults from 20 years ago, I believe.
And it was all done like under a gag order, like the Australian equivalent of a gag order. Like there were reporters in the courtroom every day who couldn't report on this.
But I think that was because it wasn't the Vatican was covering up, but there was another case ongoing that this somehow could have affected. I don't know if it was somebody from the same diocese or whatever. But the defense lawyer was like, oh, this is still iffy. Oh, for sure. Yeah. There's no doubt.
I think if it was someone who was like white working class or someone of color, they wouldn't give a damn.
Yeah.
But because it was a priest, it was a high ranking priest.
Well, like in Spotlight.
They gave it the, yeah. They gave
we
it
will
the
recommend that movie outright to you because it's got journalists, it's got scandal, it's got.
Have it on Blu-ray.
Right on. Anyway, the defense lawyer called, you know, the Pell's defense lawyer called this a plain vanilla assault. I mean,
yeah, it was vanilla sexual penetration.
Way to diminish everything that happened. Right?
And he said he apologized for it the next day. He said it kept him up all night. And I was like, yeah, thank.
Just keep you up for the rest of your life.
You think, you know, it was just like some light sexual assault, which, you know, sounds like freaking George Bluth talking about light treason, which just makes this. It just makes the point that the people involved in this don't really fully understand like the effect of this on kids and on victims and on survivors, and that, you know.
Oh, no, they don't give a crap. They really don't.
Well, they're talking today. It's like, well, we like his chances in appeal. It's like, how about liking his chances in hell? Not to be like frank like that, but how about that? And I think that's the problem with, you know, with Pope Francis coming out. Okay, guys, we have like 8 things that we're going to put on our list, so we're going to treat this with genuine purification of the Catholic Church. We're going to strengthen the reviews and safety guidelines. We're going to strengthen the accompaniment for the people who've How about we start with defrocking? Point one, you get convicted of assaulting a kid, we defrock you. You're not a priest anymore. You're out. How about step two? Someone comes to you in your church and says, hey, Father so-and-so assaulted my kid. You go to the freaking police right then and there. Yeah. None of this, like, let's get everybody's stories and then maybe we'll talk about going to the police. No. Someone comes to you and says, Father X raped my kid. You say, all right, let's go to the police. I will support you. I will take you and your child to the police so we can get this on the record and deal with it right away. Step one and two, I think that's a pretty good place to start.
Absolutely. And the way they used to deal with it was moving people around.
Yeah.
Including the priest that ended up, I can't remember his name, that ended up here in Guelph from the Hamilton Diocese. Abused mm-hmm. people here and then gets moved around and then gets to die elderly person having never worked a day.
Well, cardinal law.
Cardinal law. Theodore McCarrick, earlier this month, another high roller in the Vatican, charged or convicted of historic abuse, right? He's 88 years old, or not convicted, sorry. He was outed, but there are no charges laid. So he just gets to sort of live out his days, like Pope Benedict. You just, not that I know of any accusations against Pope Benedict directly, but they just kind of retire you. You get to go into the pasture and then you die. And then all this stuff comes out once you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands, probably people, because when those allegations started coming out in the States, it was like this diocese, that diocese,
yeah.
Philadelphia's is hundreds back to the 40s.
Yeah.
Possibly thousands.
Yeah.
The spotlight allegations, as you said, which were eventually proven. This sucker is done, in my opinion. Like, it just, you just need to shut her down. And if you want to start over, go ahead. But then part of the reason why we've never seen a residential school apology out of the Vatican is precisely for these reasons, because if they do that, then they have to pay and they have to pay and pay and pay. And that's why you're never going to hear it from them, because it's like, well, it's just,
which,
you know, and I'm being facetious here a little bit. It's just the savages, you know, it was different times, and every other church and the government who were involved with that in Canada have apologized. The Anglicans and the United Church have said, we are sorry. The United Church bends over backwards. All, like, any time you see something in the United Church or whatever, they're like, we are absolutely so sorry about this, and we want reconciliation, and we're on board in this. And it's like,
of course, you know what else?
The Vatican's just like, whatever.
You know what else the United Church has? Female clergy, gay clergy.
Yes, they do now. But yeah.
But
historically, in this day, they wouldn't. Well, they weren't the United Church for a period, but we don't want to get into church politics
Pell,
too much.
But Pell was a hardcore conservative priest who was like, no same-sex marriage, no abortion, no contraception, no girls.
And one of the people called in to sort of clean up the abuse, supposedly, right? Mm-hmm. And the same with McCarrick. It's like, we're just naming two names here. Then the list of names is legion. What's the name of that? There's a website about the sort of, I'll put it online there. The name escapes me, but it's sort of doing the reveal on where the abuse is throughout the world, the global level of abuse in the Catholic Church. And it is, you don't have to dig too deep, Canada, whatever. It is unbelievable. And if it was any other institution, people would have burnt it down. It's that bad.
I have a great quote. When they get horny, the sons of bitches, they go after nuns. If they're gay, they go after young boys. Who needs a religion like that? You know who said that?
Trump.
Philippine dictator Duterte.
Oh, boy.
So when you are
Duterte.
When Duterte's taking the moral high ground, you know you're done. And I'm not saying the Catholic Church is done. I mean, it'll still be here 1,000 years from now in some capacity. But unless something like really bad happens. But
if they have to pay and go bankrupt.
I mean, how many billions of dollars do you think they're literally sitting on?
They're sitting on all the dollars.
Right.
I don't know.
I mean,
we own that much real estate, let alone everything else, assets that you own. Like,
right. I mean, like artwork alone, they could probably buy and sell the earth five times over.
Just want to mention bishopaccountability.org. Take a look at that thing. It's mostly U.S. It does mention some other places and things, but it is unbelievable.
It's just, I don't want to sound too terribly anti-religious, but I don't know how anybody walks through the doors of one of those places now. Especially,
yeah.
I mean, it'd be one thing if like some substantive things came out of this. I mean, I realize it's a centuries-old institution and it's often late to the party. But when the Pope calls you all and their response is, you know what, we're just going to keep an eye on it, basically.
Because
what are you supposed to do? How many people's lives are ruined and have to be ruined?
Yeah.
Still?
I mean, we have – there. I'm not Catholic. I wasn't raised Catholic, but there are Catholic people in my family. And you know, I went to a wedding and it was like – I wouldn't say it's difficult because you want to be the, as I say, the perfect stranger. But at the same time, you know there's all this stuff going on. And it's like – It just feels really weird. You sort of have to detach yourself from it and say, well, you know, you're just a visitor or a stranger there, but I'm afraid I'm not buying it. So, but anyway, yeah. And
my niece was
baptized. Sorry, folks, don't get us wrong. I'm speaking for both of us. We don't have anything against Catholic people.
My niece
not
was baptized Catholic, and I know that's sort of getting into like my friend is black or my friend is gay kind of territory. But, you know, There are good people. My point is there are good people who go to church every Sunday.
Sure.
But those are the people who have to speak up. Those are the people who have to sort of take back their institution. Because
exactly.
What is very clear now is that the leaders of the church are not showing leadership on this. And they are perfectly fine with doing the bare minimum because the
– strongly worded letter.
Minimum, because the bare minimum would be kicking to the curb people like George Pell instead of paying for his legal defense.
And that has to be the last word. Well done.
Okay, cool.
Time.
That is it for our show. Yeah. So sorry if you're just if we just
we're
got
just getting
you wound
amped and
up.
Ramped, yeah.
And you're like ready to burst out of the dark. We have to let you go. So you can find us on our website, opensourcesqualf.com. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire. You can find us on Twitter at @OS_Guelph, and then you can hear this and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and the Spotify. I can be found on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com, although I haven't in ages and I should probably turn it up a notch. Apologies. I just realized today, I was like, oh, I should write something.
Yeah, we've dealt with some heavy stuff this week. So
yeah.
On the
Take a break.
Politicast channel tomorrow morning, you'll find a brand new episode of End Credits, which is the other show on CFRU I do. And there's some like nice Oscar talk on there,
right on.
Plus a review of Alita Battle Angel, which I think you will enjoy. So just chill out with
I'm
End Credits
do that.
Tomorrow.
I'm doing that.
Yeah, cool. So DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will definitely be back next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources. We'll see you then.